Hey, right now I want to go to Ord Elliott, Princeton graduate. He was a Marine Rifle Platoon commander in Vietnam. He's the author of several books. His latest is The Warrior's Silence. Ord writes that there are many avenues available to vets if they're having a hard time adjusting to civilian life after combat. And he says what worked for him so well is creative expression. And he encourages family members to offer their vet plenty of TLC, patience, and understanding. Ord, welcome to the show, sir. How are you?
Good. Pleasure to be here. Thank you very much, Chuck.
Very interesting book. I'm going to give you a heads up here that I'm going to ask you a few questions, but a little later, towards the end of the interview here, I'm going to go to page 62 because of what you said about combat fatigue, and very interesting comments there. What do you think are the common problems that are experienced by today's returning vets?
Well, I think the problems that today's vets experience are really probably not different than in the past, World War II or Korean War or Vietnam. It's just that we know more about them today. But certainly coming back, there are flashbacks and nightmares. I can tell you for 3 years after I came back, I was looking for an ambush every time I walked down the street.
Sleeping with your boots on, huh?
Well, yeah, looking around corners, looking for snipers on buildings, even though I'd only been in the jungle. I had the same nightmare, really, until even just a few years ago. But those are the lesser ones. I think the tougher ones are you know, fitting back in with your family, finding work, reorienting yourself to a civilian life when you've been in a different world and when you've experienced the ugliness of war, and particularly the loss of comrades. That was what was very hard for me.
Yeah. Two-part question here. Number one, I want to ask you why you think veterans have a difficult time talking about their combat experiences. And also, what kind of reaction? Is it sort of like overall when vets talk about here's what happened, here's what's going on, and you wouldn't believe this, like, family members, friends are going, I think he's exaggerating a little bit. Do you think they face that?
Well, I think more likely what I know from my friends that are veterans and those in the past is that you just don't talk about it. And one reason I'll speak for myself is that when I came back, I knew I was different. I'd experienced something, but I wasn't really sure how different, and I didn't really know how to explain it. It was just easier to keep it to myself, mm-hmm. Particularly because I felt that those that weren't in combat wouldn't understand anyway. And I think that's the more common situation.
In your case, Ord, you didn't come back and say, "Oh, I'm going to write a book about my adventures in Vietnam." You actually held it up inside of you forever and ever and ever. But you were still writing, and then all of a sudden, I guess you decided to release this book. A couple of years after, or what?
Well, actually, I started writing about Vietnam several years later, but I didn't decide. It just started coming out. Mm-hmm. And so the creativity in getting it out, which is a good thing to do, however you do it, whether it's talking or whatever, sort of happened for me. So in a way, that was my therapy, my way of adjusting. And I continued to write, and then actually, I wrote again in the last few years because of Afghanistan and Iraq and the problems with our troops coming back. That bothered me too. So I went back to the keyboard.
Therapy for you, right?
Beg your pardon?
You considered it therapy, I guess.
Yeah, but I mean, I didn't sit down and say I need some therapy. I'm going to go write. I just felt the need to write, and I think it had that. It had that impact on me.
I look at, for example, page 41, and when I booked you on the show, I said, well, this is going to be very interesting for Veterans Day, and I saw some of the things you talked about. But then I got the book, and I said, I probably could have spent a couple hours with this guy. Just part of this, page 41, there were whistles that I knew were not birds, as though our exact number were being counted off and transmitted to an awaiting encamped ambush. We stumbled on a large gravesite with shallow, buried, fresh NVA corpse. The brass wanted the number of dead. More of the numbers game. We were risking exposure, waiting time for the sake of statistics, Marines bleeding to death. And in this book, you mention a lot of times about the numbers game. And I remember, because I'd gotten out of the service and I was in radio, and every day it was this numbers game. Even as a disc jockey, you were looking at this. Here's how many were killed today, and here's how many of the enemy were killed. And you would hear stories about making up these numbers. And you guys made up numbers just to satisfy the bigwigs, the commanders, and is that right?
Well, not only that, they wouldn't believe us. I mean, back in Vietnam, there were two categories. It was, you know, KIA, we'd killed them, or they were probable. So we'd be in a big firefight. You know, you're in the jungle. You can't see really what's going on in many cases. And maybe we counted the two that were actually down when we moved into the other area. And we said, well, maybe we, you know, probable, maybe another 20 because of the artillery. So they'd say, well, your confirmed was 20, and probably you got another 100. And so that would all go back and go to, you know, headquarters and McNamara's spreadsheets, you know, back in Washington to, you know, publicize how we were doing.
I've been reading so many books. You know, it's really bad when you got three books going.
Yeah.
Now, are you the author that said you wish McNamara would be on point?
Absolutely.
And you're the one.
I'm
you know,
the one.
You realize that we have such young listeners, but do you remember exactly what you wrote in the book about McNamara and where you wished he was and what you wish would happen?
Well, I'll paraphrase it a little bit. Of course, McNamara was the Secretary of Defense, and he had never been in combat. You know, he is playing the numbers game and pushing all this and foisting it out politically. And for a lot of the political leaders that haven't been in combat, they send our troops there, it's not something that makes me very happy. But I wanted him to basically experience being on point. That's the lead fire team, if you will, in a platoon that's moving into an area that's most likely to get hit. And I wanted him to be on point. I wanted him to experience the fear. And I wanted him to be, you know, basically blown up and in that last instant, know what it's like to be in that situation, you know, not back home counting numbers that didn't mean anything.
So if he was, it would be comparable to earlier part of your book where you described, and you can imagine McNamara in this situation. You said the C-46 helicopter arrived. It was my first firefight, and it was easy. I was seasoned now, and it was like losing your virginity. So I guess McNamara could relate to that, huh?
I guess he could. I will say the McNamara, you know, if sometimes I write these things and feel a little badly about it afterwards. Is, you know, you write, your emotions come out, and I don't bear a grudge really to anyone. But another one of my fellow platoon commanders said he thought I went soft on McNamara. There are a lot of veterans on the ground that were not happy with his role in the war.
You know, you say also it's very important for younger veterans to get some form of understanding, advice from older veterans. And we're coming up on a break here, Ord, and when we come back, I want to go to page 162. You know, they have all the different descriptions of what they call problems that veterans get when they come back from every war, you know. And even you go back to Patton slapping, you know, the shell shock and all kinds of things. And I'm going to let you tell the listeners what you wrote about combat fatigue. Ord Elliott is my guest. The name of the book is Warrior's Silence, and the website is ordelliott.com, ordelliott.com, Warrior's Silence. We'll be right back.
Everybody's talking at me.
Chuck Wilder and Talk Back, today's program, special tribute to our veterans. And Ord Elliott is the author of The Warrior's Silence. And they can get a copy right if they go to your website, Ord?
The website or right to Amazon.com.
All right, fantastic. Now, you called it, or they called it in the hospital that you were in. Now, why were you in the hospital in the first place?
Well, I'd always had bad knees from football and everything. I had, had operations before I went. I actually had to sneak in the Marine Corps.
Oh, yes.
You had the
bad knee, and they weren't going to let you in, so when you went in, they were in a hurry in the examination room, and you showed them your good knee, correct?
Yeah, I'd already been medically discharged from ROTC. I wanted to be a Marine, no doubt about it. But, yeah.
So you jumped in a foxhole, and the bad knee popped out, and they sent you to Sasebo or somewhere.
Yokosuka, Japan, the naval hospital there. Yeah, yeah.
And so, and you say in the hospital they called it combat fatigue.
Well, yeah, just that kind of numbness, emptiness. It's what I try and capture what that is in the book, and that's why it's so difficult, I think, for veterans to talk about it, because, you know, how do you talk about empty? How do you talk about numb? How do you talk about not really having much of a feeling? How do you talk about feeling like your soul's been drained away? Like you're just kind of a shell afloat, you know, not quite alive. Those are some of the terms I use to get at it. It's sort of what's not as opposed to what is.
Yeah. You know, in studio with me today is Reese Lloyd, longtime civil rights attorney, veterans activist, works with the American Legion, and what was the group that we talk about, Patriot Outreach, all the time? Are you familiar with them, Ward?
I'm not.
Lord, Patriot Outreach was started by Colonel Antonio Monaco to do precisely what you're talking about, and that is to reach the guys who have a lot of stress, have a lot to do, they're dealing with, but decline or refuse to get any help. As you know, VA estimates 97% of the guys who need some help won't seek it for various reasons, and some of which you talk about in your book. And what he's developed is a thing called Coping Strategies, which is a CD that they can use. It's all free. He's put out 95,000 copies of it so far, and they can deal with it. It's a exercise that they can use to work on their own stress. Nobody knows about it. It's confidential. There's no diagnosis. Also, we're working with Monty Roberts, the horse whisperer, on equine therapy. It appears to be working, and you might be interested in both. We are putting on Monty is, and we're working with him through the Our American Legion Patriot Outreach Pilot Project. We're putting on a Horse Sense for Soldiers program. It's going to be December 7th through the 9th, on Pearl Harbor Day through the 9th, and then another one in January. But I admire what you've written and your insights, and I think you're doing a lot of good for a lot of people, and it's appreciated.
And I'm passing this book on. I wanted to keep it for myself, but when I get a good one like this, Reese is taking it back up to the Seattle, Washington area, Oregon, or somewhere. He was smart. He got out of California. Yep. Hey, Ord, I'm so privileged to have had you on today. We're all out of time. I appreciate it, and I hope that you're up to speed 100%, and it is a hell of a book.
Well, thank you, Chuck. I really appreciate it. Thank you, Reese.
No, thank you.
And once again, listeners, available at Amazon.com. It's The Warrior's Silence, Ord, O-R-D, Elliot, ELLIOTT.com. Check it out. Get a copy. It's one of these books you could take on vacation with you, I think, there. Yes. We're going to continue. We got another hour to go of our special program, our tribute to our veterans. We'll be back.